back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here. Portland Sports Leader 105 on FM. The Fan, 1080 AM. The Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
Fantastic.
Got a lot to get to here in hour number three of the radio program. Thanks for being with us on a Thursday. Hope everybody's ready for the 4th of July. And excited to catch up with our buddy, Tyson Alger. Look, got Eugene Springfield, the I-5 corridor, at Tyson Alger on Twitter. Go give him a follow right there. Where in the world is Tyson Alger? Where are we at this morning?
We are currently pulling into the ferry dock here in Anacortes, heading over to Friday Harbor for a little 4th of July weekend before a pretty big soccer game coming up on Monday.
Yeah, so. Pretty sizable game. Now, I got questions about that because you were at the last game in Seattle. What is the Friday Harbor is beautiful. It's gorgeous. Anacortes, great little town. The ferry ride's awesome. We got family in Friday Harbor. What's the draw there for the 4th of July?
Yeah, got some family on island, and then also we're just going to do a little camping, you know.
Figure,
you know, nothing like 4th of July when the clouds start rolling in, and so, we're going to have a good time.
That's going to be a nice little 4th of July. Now, are you going to make it on Monday to Seattle? Is Tyson Alger going to be there?
Correct.
Oh, buddy, how? All right, let's start here. So I did want to ask you about the Savannah Bananas because you were down there and your TikTok thing made me laugh out loud of like you felt like you were in a 2-hour TikTok. And so I wanted to ask you about it. Also probably slip in some Oregon questions too, but the atmosphere against Australia, you've been to a lot of big time games. You've covered a lot of like, you know, big Duck games and Autzen Stadium and road games or whatever. Like how do we kind of, you know, rank the atmospheres of what you've seen? Where did that one show up? And what are our expectations for Monday night against Belgium in Seattle?
Yeah, that was as big as any bowl game I've ever been to. And that like includes national championship atmospheres. I mean, like it does feel slightly like a college football atmosphere just because like there's I think that's probably the closest thing to like the fandom and the crowd,
right.
Just of all the supporters that show up and kind of the pre-gaming and everything. But for that U.S. Australia game, I mean, I got the kickoff was noon and I got to the stadium complex around 7:30 and there was already thousands of Australians there, are several breakfast beers deep at that point. So.
That sounds like an Australian fan. You need a couple of good breakfast beers to get your day started. I'm not opposed to that. I'll probably do it over the weekend for the 4th of July. Now that you've become more involved with soccer, I'm curious to ask you something. Like we had a listener earlier in the show asked a question. I think hockey deals with this a lot, and you know that, where we get these big moments in hockey, and it's like, well, will there be a trickle-down effect? Like, will we see this tangibly impact other parts of the hockey world? And I think you saw that to a certain extent during the Stanley Cup playoffs, where the numbers were some of the highest that we've seen. Now, you're not in the same league as the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball in terms of ratings and eyeballs, but we did see the numbers tick up. And I don't know if that's directly because of the gold medal, but I am curious as somebody, like, you're covering, obviously, the Timbers, you're around matches, you've gotten more involved in soccer, of just what you have made of how not only collectively we've gotten behind this and how big of a deal this certainly is, but do we think there will be a ripple effect of it down the road impacting watching and caring about soccer that's not a nationally based tournament?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't think we're going to suddenly, like, as soon as the World Cup ends, you know, I don't expect MLS to have, like, you know, 100% increases in overall attendance and those sorts of things. But, you know, I do think what is most valuable here is not only is there obviously kind of a growing overall interest in soccer, but I think what you're seeing, too, is, like, a lot of the stars are digging this, too. Like you've seen these amazing crowds, these amazing stadiums. I think the U.S.'s problem is it's not that it's like the U.S. doesn't hate soccer. I think the U.S. just hates being bad at soccer. I think this is kind of the perfect storm of the U.S. team is playing really well. And I think if you start to get some of these bigger international stars who aren't so deep into their careers that go, hey, I want to come over here and play. I think that's where you could really kind of start to see that momentum because, like, you know, the MLS isn't going to suddenly become the best league in the world. But if you have some of the better players to follow, I think that's what can really kind of jumpstart this thing.
Well, and I think that's, you know, it's almost like a, you know, chicken and the egg thing, right? Like the more people are interested, the more people are going, the higher the ticket prices, the more revenue, the more you can afford in terms of players. Like there's a process there that can get the MLS to another level. It's an interesting conversation to see where it goes. Tyson Alger, we're talking to our good buddy. Look out, Eugene Springfield, I-5 Corridor, at Tyson Alger on Twitter. Go give him a follow. He's up in Anacortes getting ready to jump on a ferry. So kind enough for taking a few minutes for us here this morning. I do want to ask you about the Savannah Bananas. I kind of forgot that was going on. And then I saw something on Thursday or Friday of last week, and I'm like, that's right, they're playing at Autzen. And I've never watched a Savannah Banana game on TV. I will probably never watch a Savannah Banana game on TV again, but I wanted to see what Autzen looked like as a baseball field. The takeaways, and I know you wrote about it at Lookout Eugene Springfield, the takeaways from being at a Savannah Bananas game, and are you now a banana head?
I'm not a banana head, and I don't think I'll watch another game. I probably definitely won't go to another game, and that's not because it was bad. It's just not for me. I mean, it's for kids, Andy.
Tricks are for kids, like silly rabbit.
It was just completely overwhelming being there. There's a million different sounds going on. You don't quite know where to look, and like, you know, the thing for me is I was actually kind of impressed by like how decent of baseball players these guys actually are. But like, you just like, you, if you try to focus on one thing, you're going to miss about four or five of the others. So, it was a cool event. It was cool to see like, you know, kind of the biggest circus in town. I thought Autzen was a cool environment for it. Parking was just an absolute mess, so I think some people missed a couple minutes from the games. But other than that, it was a cool event. You know, I have no complaints. It's June can be a little slow around here, so I'll go take watching a bunch of people clown around a baseball field. So
get the shot alive. It used to be we used to, like, if you know you're old when you tell cars in your neighborhood to slow down. I feel like that might be the new line now. If there's too much sound and noise and things going on at the same time, if that's how you feel about a Bananas game, because I certainly felt that way on TV. I can't imagine what it was like in person, how outrageous it was. I think I'm with you. I think we're old and that's okay. You know, it's not for us. Not every sport has to be. And it certainly was entertaining to see it on television and see Eugene. The sold out crowd, the rain held off. It was great seeing your tweets. The rain came in right after the thing ended. So we'll see if they make a return trip to Eugene and give us a little shot of life in the sports world again next year. Let me slip in a couple of duck questions before we let you go, because I know you got a busy morning. What have you made of Oregon's trip over to Japan and the Godzilla versus Duck Heisman campaign that has already begun now for Dante Moore?
I think it's really cool. I mean, you know, my issue with it is like, I mean, to bringing a player to Tokyo and doing all that, like, to me seems substantially larger than the, you know, the Joey Heisman billboard 25 years ago. But I just feel like at this point, like, you can't, like, you've done so much cool stuff that it's like, yeah, this was cool. But like, what do you have to do to make, to make the new cycle, if you will? Not that, like, right, we didn't see like Dante Moore and the pictures of them in Japan, but it's just like, oh my God, like they went to Japan, and it's just kind of like, yeah, but Savannah Bananas are here, guys.
it's like an old story at this point, where they've done so many Heisman campaigns over the years. A couple of quick, just because we're not that far off from, you know, the team reporting and it's right around the corner. Give me two or three of the most interesting storylines going into this Oregon football season that you're looking forward to writing about once you're back in town and the duck season gets kicked up.
Yeah, I think that this could potentially be the best defensive line Oregon's ever had. And so I just want to be able to kind of see the havoc you're able to wreak from being able to bring guys like Mateo and Amari Washington and Bear Alexander back. I really want to see kind of the development of some of those really star freshmen from last year, whether it was like DeCorian Moore at wide receiver or Brandon Finney at cornerback. And then, you know, just kind of going back to it, like Dante Moore, I think has the potential. Like, I think Dante Moore is as talented of an Oregon quarterback as I've ever seen. He had a very good first year. Let's see if he can do what other Oregon quarterbacks have done in the past, where you take that really good first year and then turn it even better the next year. So I think that's kind of what I'm following.
All right, last one for you, Tyson. We'll let you go. Multi-parter, because it is the 4th of July. I'm a big 4th of July guy. So what is our what's our go-to meal on the 4th? What do we like throwing on the grill? Will there be fireworks involved? And then does the 4th of July fall in Tyson Alger's top three holidays on the calendar?
4th of July can be a top three. It's not one that I necessarily rely on, but like, just, you know, so sometimes you just don't have plans for it. But like, I feel like a good 4th of July is a top tier holiday, especially if the weather is good. And I'm kind of a traditionalist. Give me some burgers. Give me a hot dog. Yeah. We didn't do a whole lot of fireworks up in Alaska because it's light out the whole dang day. So still adjusting to that, but we'll have a good time.
There you go. Tyson Alger. Look out Eugene Springfield. Go give him a follow on Twitter at Tyson Alger. Check out the I-5 corridor as well. Have a great 4th of July, buddy. Thanks for the time this morning. Travel safely and can't wait to follow your content Monday at the United States World Cup game.
All right, sounds good, buddy. Thank you.
There you go. Tyson Alger of the I-5 corridor, getting ready. Yeah, having plans certainly helps. I guess some people, like, we talked about that to start the show today, and the New Year's Eve listener chimed back in and said, my argument was New Year's Day, not New Year's Eve, because he connects it with football, and that's fair. New Year's Day is a solid day. Nobody's really doing anything. You wake up, everybody's a little hungover, you watch football all day. Like, it's a, you know, hopefully a lay on your couch for 12 hours straight and watch football. So that there's certainly a compelling argument to be made. The plans help. Friday Harbor, by the way, beautiful. If you've never been up there, Anacortes, Friday Harbor, that whole area. Oh, man. Taking the ferry over. It's awesome. My folks are going up that way later this next week, I think. They're going a little bit further. They're going to Victoria. But it's a fun vacation. If you've never done it, man, that's high on the bingo card. It should be, at least, if you've never done it before. Did you know that Binary Brewing and The Fan have teamed up for the only Fan IPA? Available for a limited time. Taste the Fan with Binary Brewing signature West Coast IPA. Go to Binary Brewing, their Beaverton location, and ask them about their only fan. So good. Only The Fan in Binary Brewing can pull it off. So go check that out. I think we had some of those out at the Golf Classic, if I'm not wrong.
I think so.
I think those were there. The logo of the cans, awesome. Mm-hmm. People had a lot of fun with that. There you go. So go check out the Only Fan IPA at Binary Brewing. 4th of July is this weekend. Excited about it. And the only question I have left on my 4th of July plans, I still need to go buy my... I'm going to go out to Clackamas County and get some fireworks today. I have decided fireworks will happen. Relationships be damned and people not wanting them there. I don't care. I'm getting myself some fireworks. Like, I'm not going crazy. I'm not going to go buy, you know, go up to Vancouver. Do they still sell illegal fireworks in Vancouver? Is that still what you have to do? Do they sell them up in Washington? Because that used to be Probably. The thing back in the day. Like, you'd have to go, we couldn't buy them in Oregon, but you could go buy them other places. Yeah. I'll never forget we did a road trip when I was in seventh grade, or sixth grade maybe. It ended horrible because my appendix broke on the trip. But we road tripped out to Nebraska for a wedding. I had a cousin who was getting married. And my mom and my aunt thought this would be a great idea. Let's rent a van and go see Mount Rushmore and, you know, Jackson Hole. And you go through all, you know, we're weaving up and down the country, taking the summer off. And there was a lot of great moments on it. Probably the highlight of the trip was realizing how prevalent fireworks are in other parts of the country. Growing up in the bubble of Oregon, you have no idea. No. Even when my brother moved, because my brother lived in North Carolina for about 10 years. And I will never forget my first time down there, because we would always do a trip usually to go see him in like December around the holidays to catch up, or he'd come back out, and then vice versa in the summer. We'd go out and visit him. Dude, the warehouse places they have, I'm not kidding you. You walk into these places and it's like half of it's booze and half of it's fireworks. And I'm like, this is a horrible combination. But man, this is kind of fun. And there are so many options, and there's all these, you know, big exploding mortars and all these different things you can go buy. And it's a whole nother world out there. And so I'm not going to go that route, but I will be buying some fountains and getting ready. I also got to decide what kind of dogs. We got to, you know, are we going all beef? Are we going sausage dogs? These are complicated questions. What's your go-to hot dog on the 4th of July?
Oh, man. Well, I said earlier in the week that I don't really look at what exactly is the components of the hot dog.
Doesn't bother you? Hot dog doesn't matter? Now, what if somebody throws a veggie dog at you? Are you okay with that?
Mm-mm.
You're out on veggie dogs.
No, sir.
So that's a bridge too far for you.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. If I'm like forced to eat that, like at the Golf Classic when you were forced to eat the veggie burrito and it actually turned out good.
I mean, it wasn't bad. Yeah. I didn't throw a temper tantrum, and it was actually shout out to Victor Rico's. It was a solid veggie burrito.
Yeah. So yeah, beef or pork, just kind of the usual standard. Don't stray off into sausage or bratwurst or something. Right. I mean, I don't mind a brat either.
Like, yeah, brat can get the job done.
Hot dogs are just the way to go. Beef or pork. Keep it simple.
Next year, I might want to go. I don't know if I'm going to do it this year or not. Everything's in my neighborhood, so we're not going too far around. Like, my folks live in the neighborhood. My brother lives in the neighborhood, so we're just walking around doing a barbecue. Next year, I might try and go a little more extreme. I might do, like, smoke a pork butt or something, or give me some racks of ribs. Like, I'm not going to go too extreme this year, but I'm a little, now that I'm here and it's like, it's in 2 days, I'm not going to go plan, you know, I'm not going to go buy a bunch of food. I still need to go get my fireworks. That will happen, but I think next year I might go a little bit bigger, But hopefully everybody's got good 4th of July plans. Thanks again to Tyson Alger for hopping on. And, man, that would be fun. He's going to be there Monday night against Belgium. That's going to be...
Very jealous.
Woo, buddy. It'll be a lot of fun, man. That atmosphere is going to be awesome. Let's talk about what we saw on the recruiting trail yesterday as the strength of West Coast football continues to be growing, it seems like. Oregon making a big move. Washington gets a nice commitment. We'll give you an update on some of the recruiting trail stuff from yesterday in college football. Talk a little college football to give you a palate cleanser. We'll get back into the World Cup coming up later on this hour of the show. We're back after this. 105.1 FM, The Fam.
I have tiny legs and I'm fat.
Hey, welcome back in, everybody. Hope your Thursdays are going great. Side note tangent, although we will talk Oregon football here. In the face of Logan on the YouTube chat, Sprague's gone for one day. We get more duck segments. Dirt must be stopped. I will not be stopped. It's not going to happen. Dude, I am so excited for football season to be here. We had a listener tweet us earlier this week. It was like, yeah, the Blazer offseason stuff's fun. The World Cup, fine. Like, can we talk some more football? Our boss is that way, our big boss. Anytime we do a football segment, we get an attaboy when we walk out of the studio because he's not that into the, like, he puts, you know, he understands it, like, gets why we talk other things. But he's like, I'm not a big Blazer guy. I'm not a bit like, we'll throw in an NFL segment. He's like, thank you. Thank you. You're welcome.
So Alec Cleanser.
We'll do it here in a moment. But I did, Harley had chimed in saying he's got to watch Joe Dirt this weekend, which may, it's now sent me down a rabbit hole of, do you have a associated movie that you watch every year on the 4th of July, or is it a rotating category of movies? And how many movies fall into that category? Because some people will go like, you know, you get like a war movie in there, you get like a, you know, Glory, or you go back to something like that. Do we have a 4th of July movie that we go to every year? Or is it like, I'm flipping around whatever happens to be on in the middle of the day, happens to be on, and I'll watch that? Because most of the normal 4th of July movies are on TV on the 4th of July.
We kind of alluded to it earlier in the week, but Independence Day.
That's the one you go
that
to every year?
Traditional...
So you'll find a way, like 4th of July, every year you'll find a way to put that on and watch it.
Yep, I will find it, and I will watch it, and I will enjoy it.
Every time.
It's so good.
It's such a good movie. And it's got the strength of, you don't rewatch it that often other than the 4th of July usually is when it's connected to.
That's correct.
And so it's not one you're watching throughout the year where you're like, I don't really have any hunger for that. It's almost like a Christmas movie in that regard. It's like, man, it's been 10, 11 months since I've seen it. I'm kind of excited again. The number one on my list is easily The Sandlot because of the fireworks scene. Like Sandlot, I would say it's Sandlot and then a sizable gap for me. But if I do find my way over to Independence Day, that's in my top three without a doubt. And then I don't know why, because there's a lot of different war movies that you can choose from. Knowing it's 250, especially this year it hits, I think The Patriot's probably in my top three.
Yeah,
I think that's my go-to top three for the 4th of July. But it is funny the different movies that people will like associate with holidays and what connects to you. Mm-hmm. Like I was reading through, so that list got me thinking. And it's been a long time since I've seen it, so maybe there's storylines and part. Like, is Jaws the Fourth of July movie to you?
Not for me.
Like, they're just funny. Reading through some of these lists has made me laugh. Like, some of them I get, like Born on the 4th of July, way back in the day with Tom Cruise. Miracle, you could go that route if you want to go that route. A lot of, you know, a lot of political movies in here as I'm scrolling through. Like, this has Forrest Gump as a 4th of July movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Huh?
What? I don't know.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Gettysburg, sure. You want to do that? I'm all for it. Gettysburg can count. Sandlot, top of the list, though. Sandlot's number one. Independence Day. National Treasure showed up on this list. Dude, this, like, what is Rotten Tomatoes doing? I know what you did last summer, 4th of July movie for people. Armageddon, solid. I can see Armageddon being one. Pearl Harbor,
yeah.
So I was scrolling through that list. I got a little sidetracked there in the commercial break. If you got a 4th of July movie, let me know what it is if it didn't show up on the list. Big Sandlot guy. Brandon is into Independence Day, which is just a phenomenal call.
It's a great combination.
I mean, it's perfect right
Will
there.
Will Smith for the humor.
Right.
And then the speech right before they go and kill the aliens. It's amazing.
It gets you going every time.
If you could
give a speech like that, you might be able to win a couple of football games. And let's pivot to talking some college football. Let's go up there! So, an update on the recruiting trail from yesterday. Oh, by the way, sorry, last tangent. Just remembered. We have a photo. We have photo evidence of Jason Swigart in water on social media. claiming 500 yards, which I know he's not. I think he's being tongue-in-cheek sarcastic because he's legitimately 5 feet away from the boat. But he's floating around in some ocean near, I don't know where he is, Croatia, wherever the hell he is right now, saying 500 yards, give or take. So everybody please go to Swag's Twitter account and roast him for thinking he could swim 500 yards in the ocean. It would be greatly appreciated. Let's get to a couple of nuggies from yesterday. So I knew it was going to be a big day. I think there's a rivals thing going on right now, or recruiting camp or game. I don't know. I don't follow it that closely. I just know that when names are going to be coming off the board to take a look, because I'm curious to see where guys are going to go. Ended up being a really nice day for the Northwest in recruiting yesterday. Washington nabbed the first one. Jakova, I think is how you say his first name. Doyal, he's a 6'3", 290-pound interior offensive lineman. Oregon was in the mix for him. I had read differing reports. Some said that Oregon backed off a little bit. Others said that they didn't because they just signed another offensive lineman. So who knows what to believe. But they were definitely one of his finalists. UCLA, Utah were the other ones. So he commits to Washington. They get some interior offensive line help. That's a nice pickup for Jed Fish. And then Oregon snags a safety, Tay Waldron Jr., 6'2", 180-pound safety over LSU, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn. He's ranked as the number three athlete, according to Rivals, in their industry rankings. So he's a guy that sounds like you could go both ways a little bit, maybe ends up playing a little bit of offense. And then the other one they added, a corner, Hayden Sepp, is the other one. He chose Oregon over Alabama and Cal, 6'3", 190 pounds. And so where this is noteworthy, and I find this interesting when you look at the ranking as a whole, like, it is a good reminder. I make fun of Timbers fans a lot with this, where it feels like there's, and this year's maybe going to be different because I don't know if there's hope at the end of the tunnel, but I feel like every year Timbers fans in the first like month of the season are like, we suck. Our team's terrible. We're probably going to fire our manager. We're not doing anything. And then you look up at the end of the year and you're like, hey, we're in the conference finals. It just seems like that happens a lot. And I know I'm, it's not every season, but they do get a handful of years like that. Oregon recruiting tends to follow the same thing for a chunk of fans every year, where there's a period in the spring to early summer where there's like a bit of a panic and a bit of a freak out of like, wait, why did this guy go to USC? Why did this guy go to Washington? Why are we outside the top 10? And then yesterday, Oregon adds a couple of guys, and you know where the recruiting class ranks right now? Third in the country. The only ones with better recruiting classes right now are Texas A&M and Notre Dame. A&M's class is awesome. Notre Dame's class is solid. They're just ahead of Miami with a couple of more commits. Texas is in the top five. Oklahoma, Ohio State a little bit further down, although this has to do with, you know, the number of commits that you have always impacts where your overall ranking is going to be. And this is, there's a couple angles of this segment that I wanted to get to. One of them being, like, I go through this a lot with buddies who are Duck fans, and the idea of this is such an important year for Oregon because of everything they're returning and their defensive line, and Dante Moore comes back for another year, and there seems to be a lot of eggs in the basket. And this is the one thing that I continue to tell people, and if Oregon doesn't win it, I know what the reaction will be, right? Like, I know what the text that I'm going to get from people who hate Oregon, who make fun of me, and that's, you know, to the victor go the spoils, and also from the buddies who I have, or, you know, friends of mine from college, from Oregon, who will have that panic mode of, this is the reason why on any given result, like, you want to ask questions about how did this happen? Why did we lose? How do we get better? All of that is valid. I don't have this disaster panic every time they lose a big game because of this. Like, this is the difference of Oregon football now than where it was 15 to 20 years ago, where you would have a season with Dennis Dixon, or you'd have a season with Darren Thomas, or you'd have a season with somebody, and you would say, man, we were close to winning a title. It felt like everything was in on that year. And then that season would end, and you'd be like, all right, now we're back to going 8-4, 9-3 next year. And that wasn't the case with Chip. But the point just simply being, you're bringing in talent at such a different level now that when you stack up however many, you know, top five recruiting classes now Oregon has in a row, and now destined for another one with a legitimate shot at having the number one recruiting class in the country for 2027, you're not going to go anywhere. And so there will be years where you're more experience. There will be years where the strength of your team is maybe more fitting to winning one of those big games. There's always years that you want to capitalize on. I get it. But the reality of Oregon football is they're a machine in that regard. And I remember making this argument last offseason, because if you go back a year ago, Oregon was returning three or four total starters. Like, that was it. We didn't know how good Dante Moore was going to be. He was bad at UCLA, transferred in, sat for a year, didn't play. There were a lot of question marks. And I remember saying last summer, that, like, we got to stop talking about Oregon in this way of, like, there's going to be a significant drop-off. They've recruited at such a high level and are so good at the portal and plugging and playing guys that they need that there's just – some years you're 10-2 and you don't have a – you know, you're not one of the three or four best teams in the country. But by and large, over the last handful of years with Lanning, they have been one of the five best teams in the sport and had a legitimate shot. Now, it's ended terribly, and you got to figure out your rematch problem because that certainly is an issue for him. It's just a reminder of, like, remember when people a month ago were freaking out, Oregon fan? You're going to be all right. You got the third overall recruiting class in the country. You're going to be okay. The other angle of it is, and we could even connect us a little bit to BYU, because I think, where is BYU? They're just outside the top 25, I thought, in recruiting classes. But there is an idea of West Coast football that we're trying to keep alive with the old Pac-12 dying. And it's interesting. Like, Oregon's third right now in 2027 ranking. Scroll down a little bit. USC, who's been good on the trail, they have far fewer commits for next year's class because they signed like 800 kids in last year's class. They only have 14 commits. But with those 14 commits, they're the 14th ranked recruiting class in the country. Bob Chesney down at UCLA has done a great job. They're 16th in the country. Cal, who I know it's different because they're in the ACC, but they're in the top 25 with Tosh Sapoy. And then Washington, after getting that interior offensive lineman, is just inside the top 25. And so you got five or six schools that are in the top 25. That kind of stuff's encouraging to see because it's usually a list dominated by the usual components, and not that a top 25 class is rare for Washington. It's just, I don't know. Having meaningful games and competitive games between West Coast teams is something that I think will help the transition a little bit in terms of feeling more normal. USC should get there with their recruiting class last year, although, you know, their window's open. We'll see how it goes. Jed Fish has shown an ability to recruit. I still think you need to see more from him in the bigger games of the season. Like, I don't know how many, as I look through his career at Arizona, there's a lot of near misses that stand out to me of, like, at Arizona, they almost beat USC one year. Like, he's been competitive in some of the bigger games. They beat Michigan a couple of years ago off of their national title run, but that Michigan team was not good, and they couldn't throw a forward pass. And so you're looking for one of those, like, feather-in-the-cap wins. And Lanning had that early in his career at Oregon. He was waiting for one of those, lost to his rivals, and then he beat Ohio State, and you're like, okay, poof, there's a big one. Rematch didn't go great, but he got one of those marquee wins and showed that he could do it. That's the next step for Jed Fish, but nice to see the recruiting pick up on the West Coast. Are you excited, BYU Brandon, for BYU this year? Is this the year? Especially with Texas Tech not having a quarterback?
Yeah.
Potentially?
I mean,
Big 12 seems open.
That definitely opens the door, because that was our door slammed in our face twice last year. Yeah, very excited. You know, Bears back. Going to be year number two.
He should take a big step, I would imagine.
Yep, I think so too. We've had a good recruiting offseason. Kalani's going to figure out how to plug and play guys. It's exciting, especially coming off the last, like, you know, just it's kind of the same with Oregon getting to the national championship. For BYU, right, it's just getting into the playoff.
You're right there.
And we've had that door slammed in our face twice now. So I think this is the year we actually get up into that place. It's just hard because we know that you can't really have a slip up. Like, you've got for someone like BYU, you've got to win all your games, unfortunately. And that's kind of going to have to be the mindset again this year. But it's another solid team. This time we're not under the radar. I think a lot of eyeballs are on us now in the Big 12. And so it's not going to be fly on the radar like we've been the last 2 years. So yeah, very excited. It's going to be exciting. And kind of what you said earlier, you know, it's trying to get the West Coast college football powers back into the mix.
Yeah,
because,
man,
I mean, trying to remember the last time a West Coast team, probably since USC, In the mid 2000s, that's probably the last time.
To win a national championship?
To win a national championship.
Oh, yeah,
a
USC
West Coast
to the Oklahoma game, probably, what is that, 05,
04
was the last time that the West Coast team won the national title.
So it's been a minute, and it's kind of been hard to kind of get in the mix with the SECs and the Big Tens.
Yeah.
So it's exciting for both sides. And for me, kind of being on, I kind of step on each platform with BYU and then with Oregon working here, like, both of those teams are very – It deserves to be optimistic.
Absolutely, dude.
The ceiling is high for both of those sides.
Well, and then the other thing too, you add in on both rosters and teams going into next year is the component of the loyal coach, right? And Satake got flirted with a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm so glad he didn't make that move. That would have been Penn State and Kalani Satake just
that would have been weird.
That's oil and water to me. Not to say that you couldn't be successful there, and it's not always about culture and that kind. I get it. BYU just makes sense. Like, that's where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And there might be a bigger job that he jumps to at some other point, but getting those guys to kind of look around and then say, you know what, no, I got a good thing going here, man. Like, look at what BYU's done the last 2 years. They started a freshman quarterback last year. They went 11-1 in the regular season. The only team they lost to was Texas Tech. They just lost to them twice. Right. I think it was almost the same score, identical both times. BYU is fascinating because they have been so good the last 2 years. And to your point, it almost feels like the same. Like, each year, it's like, why are we punishing BYU for losing that game? Shouldn't they be in the playoff conversation? Like, It was funny this whole, I remember last year with the conference championship thing, and that's a debate we have about, should we get rid of the game? Does, you know, what's the purpose of the game anymore? And should they just be playing opportunities? And I would prefer that. I think conference championships used to mean something, and now in an expanded playoff, you win one, that's great. I can certainly tell you, winning a Big Ten title didn't matter squat to me because of the way they lost to Ohio State, the Rose Bowl, right? Like, that was cool in the moment. And then you're like, well, that season ended, I don't care about the conference championship anymore. So they've lost a little bit of their weight out there. I just remember laughing out loud. Alabama got drilled in the SEC title game, just smoked by Georgia, drug up and down the field, dominated in the rematch of their game. And they didn't move a lick in the rankings. And BYU, who was 11-1, had only one loss to Texas Tech, who was undefeated, played Texas Tech again, lost the game, competitive in the first half, got away in the second half, and they dropped like two spots in the rankings. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought the loss isn't supposed to count here. So Alabama's not punished, but BYU's punished, and that's the – if I BYU it should be very frustrated with the way they've been treated the last couple of years, because they had a strong argument 2 years ago. They certainly had a strong argument last year, being 11-1 regular season with a conference loss. The unique thing, by the way, for you guys in the Big 12 this year, you don't play Texas Tech in the regular season.
I know.
So that – I don't know if you're going to run the table or not, but it gives you the idea of you might have...
Again, the door is open again. So
you got to show. You guys got Notre Dame at home, too, by the way, this year?
Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Talk about a big game. middle of October. See, doesn't it just get your juices going? You get excited. I can't wait.
It's going to be great.
I can't wait. Happy college football early release day to everybody out there. Can't wait to dive into that later this afternoon and this evening. Where am I going? Road to glory? I don't know. I got to decide. Got to pick my finalists. We'll wait and see. Let's nerd it out. Let's get back into the World Cup a little bit. We'll get to the Magic Hat coming up top of the hour. Got some audio for the Magic Hat, but some lingering takeaways from the World Cup, the ratings that have come in from some of the other games, and also a bit of a peekaboo into what's to come this upcoming weekend, because the slate's only going to continue to get better. So we'll dive back into some footy football next on the Fan. Felt good to talk some college football there. By the way, shout out to the Cougs. This week they announced, I'm going to make sure I get the tribe right. I got it in my notes. Hold on. Give me a moment. Scrolling. The Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. They're doing the jersey patch sponsorship on Washington State football jerseys this year. And I believe, if I read correctly, they're bringing in about $8.5 million from that over the next 3 years, if my numbers are correct. So,
wow.
Dude, every penny helps, man, no matter where you're at. So that was really cool to see for Washington State. Exciting. You got a nice sponsorship there and bringing in a little more do-re. Me, a couple quick thoughts, and then we'll get back into the World Cup. Oregon's killing it again on the recruiting trail. Pains me to admit, however, I noticed that their blue-chip ratio has dipped a little bit from where it has been. Have twice as many three-star recruits as they had in all of last year's class. I don't know if that's an indication of anything, just an interesting outlier. That certainly, I mean, I think all of this is you look it through the lens of how many of those three-star guys, first off, get upgraded, right, as the recruiting class goes on for next year, because I know there's some kids that they feel very confident that will become four-star kids, and they're kind of, like, Sprague's got a buddy, or his nephew's got a buddy who plays at Nelson. He just committed to Oregon. He's currently a three-star recruit. He's one of those guys that's been under the radar a little bit, and they think with the big year will take a jump, so there's part of that. There's also part of it of, like, sometimes you just need volume in a recruiting class because they returned a lot of guys to last year's team who will be graduating and going on to the NFL. And so you need a few extra bodies there to kind of fill some of those holes. And so you're digging deeper into the depth of your recruiting class potentially. So interesting tidbits. We got Husky fans talking trash. I'd be more worried about not going 0-3 with Jed Fish against Dan Lanning, but you do you, boo. Okay, keep holding your quarterback hostage. Maybe this is the year it works out for you. World Cup fever. I saw this. And it blew me away. And I think it sums up how bad they've been historically and how cool this moment is. Now, I'm hoping I'm going to say the name right. Mauricio Pochettino. Is that how you say his last name? The manager?
Close enough.
We'll allow it. Did you know after yesterday, he has more World Cup wins than any other United States coach in the history of the World Cup?
I saw that, yeah.
What? Excuse me? Hey, what's up, Pat? You want to come in, Patrick? You can come crosstalk if you want, buddy. Patrick is here early. He wants to get his soccer takes off. I was texting him last night. I felt bad about Pat. He went to a movie the other night. We talked about something when I left, and then he texted me something from the movie, and I totally forgot the reference, and I was like, I didn't respond to it because I was out of it at that point in the night, and I didn't respond to him. So I felt bad, so I own one. He is the crosstalk king himself, Mr. Footy himself. Patrick Harris in the building, ladies and gentlemen. My footy guy. USA. 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 Should my mind be blown that the fact that this guy has coached four World Cup games, four, he's coached four World Cup games, and he is already the winningest manager in World Cup history? How is it possible, one, that that could be the case, and two, how have we been that in, I mean, I know we've been bad. That just blew me away. So Bruce Arena, in his entire time coaching the USA team, won two games. Robert Miller, never heard of him, two. Bob Bradley, two. Berhalter, wasn't he the one that everybody hated? One.
Yes.
Klinsmann, one. Some other guy I've never heard of, one. And William Jeffrey, one. That blew me away. But I got to tell you, buddy, watching it last night, I'm texting you about red cards. I don't know what's going on. Doesn't intent matter? I'm confused by this. I got footy fever right now.
I did not have my phone buzzed, and I looked down, and it said Andy Johnson. I was like,
something going on right now.
Is everything okay?
Am I all right?
Why is this guy texting me right now? Well, let me tell you about Russell Crowe. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino.
Dude, he is such a good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking guy.
He is a good-looking cat. Well, I like his vibe.
For the longest time, he didn't have long hair. He was like a trimmed, not a buzz cut, but not the flowing locks. Then he got the flowing locks. He's Argentinian, so he's naturally gifted with it.
Yeah.
Then he got the flowing locks, and now he looks like Russell Crowe.
He does, absolutely.
But kind of a sexy Russell Crowe.
He does, yeah. Like a little bit of a younger version of Russell Crowe, a little less wear and tear on the face and the body, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect setup for when we win the World Cup and they make the Miracle movie 5 years from now.
We were laughing about that last night.
We already know who's going to play him. Like, you already have made the hire.
Easy.
You're done. It's written for you. Russell Crowe, come on down.
He probably doesn't have to, like, body change a whole lot either.
He's a little hefty.
Like, Russell Crowe will go big. Super skinny, yeah, and jacked or super fat, you know, to play Dick Cheney or something like that. Whatever he does, he's great that way. He can kind of be cool and not have to deal with it.
So explain to me how Balogun gets a red card in that moment.
I can't.
Squat about squat when it comes to soccer. And the only thing that my mind went to was, like, targeting in football, where there's, like, we know when we see targeting, it's like, ooh, that was a spear. Get that guy out of there. And then, like, oh, their heads bump together. Why? What? And so I figured intent would be a bigger part. Also, considering the punishment of getting tossed, like, now he's out for the next game against Belgium. That is a massive decision. Yellow card, I think I'm fine with. But the red card, and then the Bosnia coach losing his ass, grabbing the ball. Like, dude, we were playing a man down on a bogus call. Put the ball back and play. Let's go. That seemed pretty bogus last night.
Very, very strange situation. You see this, too, when it comes to, like, targeting, like, as you mentioned, the NFL or college football. When you slow things down, it is always going to look worse or better.
Yeah.
And I thought when you slowed it down, it proved little to no intent.
Right.
He's leaning to his left. He's trying to find his footing on his right.
Right.
He can't see the back of the guy's leg. There's no way he's intentionally doing it.
No.
When you saw it real time, you're like, oh, that stinks. Probably a yellow card, but I don't think he meant it. But when you
hurt like hell.
But
like,
when you slow it down, you see the cleats drag across the calf, step on the ankle, it twists. It looks really ugly.
Yeah, it's gnarly
when you slow it down. And that's why they gave him the red card. I thought it was really brutal. I thought the penalty that was given in the Belgium-Senegal game was really brutal, too.
Yeah. See,
the thing is that the World Cup is they try desperately not to give you red cards. They
because really, of the punishment
exactly,
of it and what it means,
they really don't want to do that because it changes a game so dramatically. And you saw that. USA was dominating possession yesterday. The second they got that red card, it completely flipped instantly. Naturally, you're playing down a man.
Right.
Which is why they should be very hesitant to give red cards. And that one, they sent the ref to the monitor, which always concerns me because that means VAR goes,
we see something here.
We see something, and you need to take a peek at this. And when he went over there, I was like, oh, my God, he's getting a red card. And it's not just because I'm a USA fan. It's the intent.
Yes.
But when you slow it down, it's ugly.
Yeah, there's
no
doubt.
It's the worst foul I've seen in the World Cup.
It was outside of the
broken leg for Canada.
Oh, a guy in Canada broke his leg.
Oh, like air cast.
Ugh.
He was like ripping on something that looked like a vape pen. And I swear it's just like, it's like Novocaine or
something. Give me something, dude.
I thought he was just getting high.
Okay, I feel better now. Put the cast on.
The full air cast. And he's just like waving to the fans all smiling.
I missed that part. That's hilarious.
Outside of that one, it was a pretty, it's a bad foul. But again, there's no intent.
Yes, like it's just going to happen when you're running around. You're going to step on somebody. And it's only bound to happen.
I think what sucks the most about it is Flo was the best player on the pitch last night, and he's been so solid for USA just in general.
Damn near had two goals last night.
That creation up front from him has been so good, so electric, and America's kind of missed an electric forward like that since maybe Jozy Altidore. Say what you want about Jozy, but Flo is awesome.
Yeah.
And now he's out against Belgium. Now, I still like America's chances against Belgium. I think they have been one of the more underperforming teams in the tournament.
I mean,
they
look about old. A team that should not have won yesterday. That was a miracle yesterday.
They look old and slow to me. They're the same guys they were 10 years ago, and it's 10 years later. It's just father time catches up to you. So I think they'll be fine without Balogun. It just stinks because that's creation.
Yeah.
But one thing that I love about Mauricio Pochettino yesterday, which I thought he was a big reason why that game was won and stayed 1-0 and then eventually 2-0, he plays a back three. And a lot of the reason he plays a back three is because America doesn't have the talent to play a back four. And a lot of times managers in the past, when a situation like that would have happened where you go down a man, they would have changed schematically.
Kind of panic, like, oh, we got to hold on, hold on.
It's like, okay, this man-to-man's not working anymore. We got to go zone. And Pochettino stuck to it. He said, we're going to stick with what our game plan is, three in the back, five in the midfield, and instead of two up front, we'll just go one. We lose that offensive opportunity, but we stay true to our identity.
Right.
And I thought that was massive. And guys like Berhalter and Klinsmann and Arena would have all panicked and changed. And he said, nope, this is what we do. I'm sticking with it. And it paid off.
They almost got another goal, too. Pulisic almost had one, too. They got overturned because of an offsides call. So
and, like, he had that down a man, which makes me think, okay, we're going to be okay.
Right, right. Let me ask you two questions on this.
Shoot.
So as somebody who is not, it's new for me, right?
Sorry.
I imagine you're living in the world where it was like me during the Winter Olympics of like, people are talking about hockey, dude. This is cool, man. You guys want to talk about more about hockey? Can I do more hockey?
You like don't want to get too excited.
Right.
Everybody stay calm.
You want to talk about hockey with me? Yeah, dude, I'd love to talk about hockey.
Dude,
with
I blew
you.
Like five stop signs to get here.
Just to get it on time. Where does Malik Tillman's goal rank amongst all-time World Cup goals? And I know that we have gotten out of the knockout round before. The last time was in 2002. So it was a very long time ago. We were playing the fun game of what were you doing in 2002?
Watching that live at Hudson's Bay High School.
There you go. Considering it's on home soil and the momentum that has been built from this run, was that the biggest World Cup win in men's soccer history?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I think one thing you have to keep in context is the expansion of the field creates an extra round.
That's fair.
So when you see things like Norway wins their first knockout game in country's history, it's like, right, because they've never won a round of 16 game.
Mexico hadn't done it, 40 years,
exactly.
Right, when they won the other night?
Now you have a round of 32 game, which kind of gives you a little run-up, and if you win your group, in theory, you should win that knockout
should
stage.
Should get a favorable matchup, and they take advantage of
it. A Netherlands-Morocco matchup is brutal for the Dutch,
yeah,
and that is going to happen in the World Cup. I would say if USA wins in the round of 16, that will be the biggest.
So the Belgium win on Monday, if they win,
yes,
they'll be number one.
Okay. I think this is about as equal as the Mexico win.
Okay. What about the Tillman goal? Because that felt
in
like
American history?
Like that felt like a touch of class that we don't usually, like historically speaking, don't have guys that can pull that off. That was awesome.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
As far as importance, TBD.
Okay.
TBD.
Depending on how far the run goes.
Team was already up 1-0.
That's true. But man down late
man
in the
down.
Game. Yeah, okay.
Banger of a goal. To your point, USA Dude. Doesn't have guys that take free kicks like that.
No, that felt like, am I speaking Portuguese now? What, am I in a different country?
The guys that make those kicks play for countries that have stars.
That was kind of my takeaway. All right. Hey, now, all right, last one for you.
Shoot.
House money. Monday night house money, or do we got to win Monday night?
No, you got to win.
Got to win Monday night.
I thought Brandon mentioned something a couple weeks ago. I think it might have been last week. He said something. You guys were talking about ceiling and floor.
Yeah.
The ceiling and floor for this team is the round of 16.
Okay. And we've reached our ceiling and floor.
I think if you get to the round of 16, you should get to the round of 16. Like, that's the floor.
Yeah.
And if you lose in the round of 16, I'm kind of okay with it because you could run into a Spain or a Portugal.
Okay.
And if America loses to a Spain or a Portugal in the round of 16, I'm not going to be super beat up about that.
Right, 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 right. Okay, makes sense.
And if you get out of that, you get, like, France. So, I mean, like, buckle up, guys. Like, have a blast. Okay.
Not just getting any easier for
yes.
me.
Yes. So, house money.
Is that like playing Indiana for a second time in the Peach Bowl? Is that what you're telling me?
Maybe.
Yeah, a little
maybe,
bit like that.
A little
okay.
bit like
Uh-oh.
That.
Uh-oh.
So, you feel good. I think playing against Belgium is house money in the sense that you don't need to panic. This should be okay.
Okay.
However, you have to win that game.
What's the number from last night's game going to be? 35 million?
Hmm.
40 million?
What was the...
Australia
game.
Australia, the last one that they lost to Turkey, I think ended up somewhere in the high 20s, but that was also a game that didn't really matter.
Backups.
Right, backups, some of the key guys not in.
I'll lean 40, yeah.
You're going to lean towards 40? Yeah. It's going to be a huge, dude, that scene, the setting.
Belgium will be 50 million. Seattle has cemented themselves as base camp for Team USA.
Yeah.
That is the best crowd that USA has seen at the World Cup. It's in Seattle. Which is crazy. You would think LA, you would think the Bay Area. I mean, the Bay Area sucks in terms of trying to create a fan fest.
We care more about soccer in the Northwest, though, than they do.
But Seattle, I mean, I hate those Flounders up there, but they all turned out for old Estados Unidos.
Can we not do another joke from the Timbers on the stadium stuff? That didn't age very well.
It did not.
Probably not.
I mean, I love Providence Park.
I do too. It's
USA
beautiful.
At Lumen. I mean Seattle Stadium.
Thank you.
Seattle Stadium.
All right.
That's a good site.
What do you got coming up on the show today?
I think somebody got traded in the NBA.
Who? What? No. No. Did we get him? Yeah. Did we get him?
No.
Oh, must have been a big package though to go get him.
Must have been huge.
Had to have been five first round picks probably, like four players. Out of our price range.
We'll get into Jaylen Brown. We'll also get into what it means for the Blazers as well. And we're going to scream about Moda Center too.
Yes! Let's do it, dude. Yeah.
And USA.
Blazer bingo and USA. I love it. Thanks for stopping by.
Always, buddy.
Patrick Harris of the firm. It is the final hour, and we are here next on The Fam.